From the Environment Report at Michigan Radio, I'm Bryce Huffman. People all over Michigan have questions about industrial chemicals being found in their drinking water, and some of them don't trust all the information they're getting from the government. All this week, the Environment Report has been looking at the issues of PFAS in our state. In this final installment, residents tell us they are looking for answers on their own. Cranes are carrying chrome bumpers across the factory line at one of Lax Enterprises' plating facilities near Grand Rapids. Travis Brown worked at a different Lax Enterprise plating plant back in 1999. He used PFAS chemicals to control plating baths.
Well, PFAS, what it does is it puts down a layer of bubbles, kind of like a bubble bath, and it basically traps hexavalent chromium from escaping into the air.
Brown says at the time, he thought PFAS protected workers from more dangerous chemicals.
I always thought of it as the lesser of two evils.
But his thoughts on PFAS changed nearly 15 years after he left Lax Enterprises.
The first time I ever heard about it being used as something we should be worried about would have been Garrett Ellison's article in 2016.
Ellison wrote about groundwater contaminated with PFAS in northern Kent County. Since then, state and county officials have met with residents to talk about the pollution. PFAS compounds have been discovered at high levels in private wells, municipal water systems, and larger bodies of water all over Michigan. Brown started the citizens group Michigan Demands Action Against Contamination in November 2017. He created a Facebook page and began sharing all the information he could find. This page was the first Bob Jones had ever heard about the ongoing PFAS contamination. Jones, like Brown, lives in Comstock Park.
That's not a really good way to find out that your water's poisoned.
Jones gets his tap water from Plainfield Township, and he says no government entities warned him about the water. Back in 2013, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality found that PFAS in the township water supply was above 70 parts per trillion. The state adopted 70 parts per trillion as its standard for PFAS earlier this year.
In my mind, 0 parts per trillion should be the standard.
Recent test results show that PFAS levels in Plainfield Township water have dropped to less than 10 parts per trillion. But Jones says he's still skeptical.
And I have no confidence that they're interested in solving this problem.
Other residents say they're happy with how the state has handled the contamination so far. Robert Pakila lives in Parchment, right next to Kalamazoo. He spoke to Michigan Radio after a town hall meeting about PFAS contamination in Parchment City water back in July.
The people up there on the panel are pretty well informed, and they're letting us know what's going to happen and what isn't, and it's been good.
While Pakila thinks officials are doing a good job, others can't help but be reminded of how the state handled the Flint water crisis. Dr. Eden Wells is the chief medical executive of the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. Wells was a figure in the Flint water crisis, but she believes the state has learned from its mistakes.
If there is a silver lining, you know, for the Flint water crisis, is that one of them, that we have a much more vigorous, forward-leaning stance towards the approach to potential environmental impacts to health of any chemicals.
The state is in the process of testing over 1,300 public water supplies for PFAS. But Travis Brown, the factory worker we heard from earlier, wonders what other dangers might be lurking in our drinking water.
What should you be worried about are the chemicals that are not being tested for.
Brown thinks the best way for residents to stay safe is to take matters into their own hands by filtering their tap water, for example. He says people have put too much trust in governments to keep them safe. For the Environment Report, I'm Bryce Huffman, Michigan Radio News.
Governor Rick Snyder signed a new state law in 2016 that's meant to make sure all kids can read by the end of third grade. It doesn't take full effect until next school year, but starting this year, schools are required to do some things differently. Michigan Radio's Bryce Huffman shows us what that sounds like at one school in Grand Rapids.
It makes the letter is E, and it makes the S sound like an elephant.
This is Gina Russ. She's a volunteer reading coach at Stocking Elementary School. She's helping a first grade student learn her vowel sounds.
I am trying to help this young student understand the parts of reading and become better at them.
Russ says a lot of students are good at one or maybe two parts of reading when they enter first grade.
But in order to become a reader, they have to become better at all the parts and learn how to put them together.
The student Russ is helping is one of eight in this first grade classroom who has a daily reading intervention as a part of an individual reading plan. The idea is to get students reading at grade level by the end of the school year. The new law says schools have to provide reading interventions to students from kindergarten to third grade who test below grade level in reading. Schools also need to tell parents where their kids' reading level is, provide at-home reading plans, and run reading workshops. All that to prepare for next year, when students will have to repeat the third grade if they're a year behind grade level in reading.
One of the most devastating things I think that can happen to a child is being retained.
This is Tracy Carpenter. She teaches first graders at Stocking Elementary and has been with the school district for more than 30 years. Carpenter feels uneasy about the new law.
But I do think that it has brought literacy for our little ones up to the forefront.
Carpenter and other teachers have been doing reading interventions for years. Joanne Riemersma is the principal at Stocking. She says the biggest change the new law has required for the school this year is parent involvement.
Probably what's moved us the most since the law is just our understanding that it takes more than just the school and the teachers and the principal and the students. It takes community and family in order to really move some of these kids.
Rachel Peterson has two kids at Stocking. Peterson says she has some anxiety about how the new law might affect her second grade son.
The fact that if he's not exactly, you know, where the state thinks he needs to be, then they're going to hold him back.
Both of her kids are on reading plans. Peterson has them read to her regularly. This is one way she sees their progress.
And then I've also started, like, asking them questions about the book when they're done with the book, because I feel like if I don't do that, then I don't think they're actually comprehending what's happening in the book. I think they're just reading the words.
But Peterson appreciates knowing what she has to do from home to help her kids become better readers.
It's worked well for my kids so far. They've excelled and you know, they're all doing really well from what I've heard from their teachers. They seem to be doing really well at home. They're moving up in their reading levels. And so I think it's, you know, a good thing to have in place.
The new law requires schools to update parents on their kids' reading progress 3 times a year. But teachers at Stocking say they don't need a state mandate to do that. Rachel Peterson gets regular updates to make sure her kids are on track. I'm Bryce Huffman, Michigan Radio News.
Black residents in Grand Rapids have long thought the city's police targeted them unfairly. But a traffic study released last year backed up those thoughts with data. Michigan Radio's Bryce Huffman reports what residents and the department think has changed since that study was released.
This is the intersection of Kalamazoo Street and Burton in Grand Rapids. It's a windy day in this predominantly black neighborhood on the southeast side of the city. A few pedestrians make their way to the bus stop next to the mobile gas station on the corner. 4 years ago, Elaine Howell was on her way to work at Meijer. It was in the early hours of the morning, so it was still dark out. She noticed a police car following her as she approached this intersection.
Officer, and I said to myself, get ready because I know he's going to stop me.
Howell kept driving with the police car behind her for about a mile. Once she pulled into the Meijer parking lot on 28th Street, she saw flashing lights.
My heart started racing, and I said, hey, you didn't do anything wrong. I kept my hands on the steering wheel. I didn't reach for anything. I let them instruct me.
Her fear was heightened by what she saw next.
When he approached my car, he also had his hand on his gun.
The officer gave her a speeding ticket, but it was later voided after police looked at traffic cam footage that showed she was actually going below the speed limit. Howell made it out of that situation without any physical harm, but her trust in the Grand Rapids police might be forever lost. And she's not alone in that mistrust. Black residents have long criticized the department for questionable stops just like this. Last year, a traffic study showed that between 2013 and 2015, black drivers were twice as likely to be stopped by police as their white counterparts. The department started getting more intentional with implicit bias training for its officers, making sure to really examine why officers make the choices they make when dealing with civilians. It's only been a year since the ball got rolling on this. The city's chief of police, David Rahinsky, acknowledges that residents might not see a big change quite yet.
It's an ongoing effort. It's not a one and done. There's not a magic potion for these types of issues, but this is a great community. It's a great police department, and I have no doubt that collectively we'll get to where we want to be.
The department has an outside consulting firm looking through the policies and procedures officers follow. They're trying to ensure that there aren't any disparate outcomes for any particular group of people. But some residents are skeptical. LaDonna Norman is a Black woman who frequents public meetings to discuss issues like police bias. Norman was stopped by police back in January. She says everything about the stop was odd.
It got to the point where I'm about to have an anxiety attack. I'm not feeling well. I'm anxious. And the police have me pulled over and they're questioning my identity.
She says police stopped her for not using a turn signal. But for some reason, they started asking questions about her twin sister. Norman wasn't ticketed, and she wasn't physically harmed, but her idea of the city's police was further soured. Norman thinks the police department is inherently racist, and that no amount of training or community meetings will change that.
They're trying to rebuild something that was systematically set up for us to fail.
I walked around predominantly Black neighborhoods in Grand Rapids for hours at a time to ask people what they thought of the city's police. We can't play most of their responses on air, but there were a lot of four-letter words used. We can, however, share one response that came from a man named Darian Colbert. He's a Grand Rapids native who thinks that Black residents have been pushed around for too long.
We ain't gonna wait forever. You know, eventually it's gonna get to a breaking point. Everything do, you know, when you oppress people, they rise up in a fiery anger.
So the Grand Rapids Police Department has two jobs ahead. The first is acknowledging and fixing any bias in how it polices Black neighborhoods. The second, which might be even harder, is building trust with Black residents. I'm Bryce Huffman.